Greetings to you on this Thursday, and that means it's time for Perspectives once again on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for being at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone line, the email machine, the Twitter device, and all of the ways we have to communicate with one another nowadays, because that's what we're about here. 850-414-1234 is our main number if you want to get on the program telephonically. We do have a toll-free number if you are old-fashioned and have one of those landline things and you're outside the Tallahassee local calling zone, 800-926-8809. Email your preferred form of communication. It's perspectives@wfsu.org, or zip us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. If I may wax personal for just a second, perhaps my most treasured memory growing up in Western Maryland was hanging out with my grandfather in his, what I thought of as a subterranean lair. It was really his basement workshop, but it just seemed so mysterious and underground and dimly lit. And instead of monsters, though, there were wonders in that room, because there, as a professional auto mechanic during the day, he'd literally bring his work home with him at night. And I'd sneak down and watch him do everything from rebuilding bulky carburetors, remember those? He would even repair typewriters, which customers had brought to my dad's office supply store to be fixed. And my grandfather quickly became adept at fixing Smith Coronas and Royals and Underwoods and those names from the past. So my granddad, Pap as I called him, tried to share his skills with me during these years, but I never really caught on. I didn't have his facility when it came to that kind of stuff, but still those hours that I spent with him will always be among the happiest times of my life. And I tell you this because last Sunday was nationally recognized as Grandparents Day in the U.S. And so with us to honor that occasion and those it does honor to is a newly minted grandpop by the name of Jack Levine. And if you don't know Jack, after he spent about 25 years as president of Voices for Florida's Children, which is a statewide advocacy network, Jack founded Four Generations Institute, and that promotes intergenerational policies, innovative programs, benefits the young and families and grandparents and all of us. And Jack, it is so good to see you again.
Well, Tom, I must tell you, sitting at the table with you is a distinct honor. I'm a big fan of not only you and your news department and, of course, this show, but the whole public broadcasting family. We're about to go through another fun drive, and I know your listeners are supporters, but just in case one or two are not, WFSU.org is a way to go in and support. And I'm not just pandering. I'm a devoted member, and I think others need to be too. So thank you for this invitation.
Well, we really appreciate your being on deck to share your expertise with us, Jack, those many years that you've been following the evolution of our American family here.
Well, you know, I think we all start personally. You just started personally about your grandfather, and I'll just wax a little bit about mine. I grew up with old people. My father was 60 when I was born. That's 60. And that's the time in 1951 when 60 was kind of old. I'm here to give testimony that it's not old anymore. And those younger listeners may say, Jack, you got it wrong. You're delusional. But really, we are healthier. We have longer longevity. But when my old man dad, who was also a blind man, lost his sight in his midlife, I didn't realize the gift his blindness and his age were to me for many decades. He hosted his peers. Remember, these are a whole bunch of old 70-year-olds sitting around arguing about the issues of the day, civil rights, all kinds of important issues that I just sat there as a child, astonished at their passion. Little did I know they were planting seeds for a later career. The other thing about my dad that I think is important is he was an immigrant. He ran away from Tsarist Russia when he was 17 years old. The story of immigration is the American story, and anybody who besmirches the ability, capacity, and devotion of immigrants has it wrong, because we are truly not only a nation of immigrants, we are a family of immigrants. And you don't have to go back more than one or two generations for most of us to find who came here when, what is their story. So this grandparenting thing is very personal for me.
Well, tell us about the grandbaby then, huh?
Uh-oh, it's going to eat up some time here, Tom. Well, Julianne was born on Thanksgiving morning in Washington, D.C., our son Josh and daughter-in-law Natalie. there first. And I was warned. I was told by my buddies, you know, for over the years, Jack, just wait till you catch the bug. And sure enough, looking into her eyes, just observing her, she wakes up ready for action. I think she doesn't have a consciousness of where she was during the sleep phases, whether it be overnight or napping. But when she's up, she's up. And my wife, Charlotte, and I are just so thrilled with the devotion, the dedication that our kids are having for their child. It's very inspirational. And now I know, too, about the perspective of what if she was born unhealthy? What if she was born with a limited capacity, special challenges? And there are a lot of children who don't have the full faculties of nature. And that makes me even more resolute to do what I can and what we can as a society for those who have some need. So it's a balance. The devotion we have for ours and the admiration that we have for our family members, I think, needs to be really translated by most people as a sign of gratitude for what they'll do for others.
But there's an awful lot of families today, Jack, because of what we had mentioned at the outset, the fact that we are kind of evolving as a society. There are more single-parent households than there were certainly 25, 30, 40 years ago. You have parents who are dissolving their marriages, where you have opioid addiction, and suddenly it is the onus on the grandparents to step into the gap and pick up that young life and move it along.
You're so right about that. And the trend is very, very impressive. And I don't say impressive in a good way. We now have three times the number of children in the U.S. over the last 15 years who have sole responsibility of a caregiver who happens to be a grandparent. That's tripled in the last 15 years. And kinship centers have grown up around Florida, and we are a leader in this because of our demography, I think, and our creativity to say, well, what are the special needs of these grandparents? But Tom, if I may, let's go back a century. When my father came to this country in 1908, life expectancy in the United States of America was 47. Now, there's math because there were a lot of infant deaths. There were a lot of early infections that were not detected. So those did skew. There were a lot of young deaths. But even so, 47, we've almost doubled life expectancy. When I was growing up in the 1950s, if a child said, one of my buddies, you know, playing softball, said, my great-grandmother's coming to visit, we'd put down our bat and our ball and say, your grandmother has a mother? Our grandparents were the oldest people we knew. So we have gone in this nation from a three-generation family and society, children, parents, and grandparents, to four generations, in some cases five and even six. So let's look at what that does to our social structure. What that does is we have to figure out how to balance another generation or two, and frankly, we don't have a plan. I mean, these 90-year-olds, they're out there. I'm not saying that they're incapacitated, but they need some help. And we have more 85-year-olds alive today than our entire U.S. history. So when you add up all the demography, I know number begins N-U-M-B, but when you add up all the demography, you realize that we have special stresses. Add to that mental health and substance abuse. Add to that debt. Add to that a whole plethora of special needs that families are arising out of nowhere because of trauma or accidents. So we have to set up a society where our research of what we know goes into public policy. And that's what advocacy is. It's translating what we know into what we're going to do with what we know so that we don't flounder. And that's a serious, serious challenge for us, not only in an election year, but especially in an election year.
Well, we think of the old time. Once again, we're waxing kind of nostalgic here, and not all nostalgia is rose-colored glasses. There's some pretty bad stuff back in history that we can recall, as you already elucidated, with the incredibly restricted life expectancy that we used to have not all that long ago. But we made provisions in many instances for our parents as they got older. There was no such thing as assisted living facilities. Well, there were, but we certainly wanted to keep mom and dad out of there. And so when one parent would pass on, the other parent would come live with us.
Sure.
And, you know, we had an upstairs bedroom or even a closet, something. But anyway, that's where mom or dad would go. And until they passed on, that was the way it was. And that does not hold true anymore.
Well, there's so much diversity in our lifestyles, in our mobility, in our moving around. Look at Florida. Three quarters of Floridians over age 25 are not born in Florida. They're born in another state or another nation. So we're basically a state of strangers. If we just want to concentrate on Florida for just a moment, you know, which is, you know, where I've lived now for 40 years, it's really been transformative because people move in and they don't know the name of their neighbor. Their family is nowhere to be found, only in an emergency. So we have some very, very daunting challenges. But I'm here to report to you, Tom, that we've got some real achievements in Florida, some real progress that has been made with certain kinds of policies and programs that I think the grandparents need to learn about and advocate as we go forward because, you know, it's the highest population of voters by proportion of our over 55-year-olds. So if we want to get some attention to an issue, I think we need to go to our over 55-year-olds and teach them what they may not know because these programs did not exist when they were raising their children, or should now I should say our children. And sure enough, we are the laboratory for some excellence, and I'd like to outline a few of those if you have a moment.
We will do that right after the upcoming break, so we will have plenty of time to get deeper into this situation here. Jack Levine of the Four Generations Institute, here our special guest on Perspectives, talking about matters that are applicable to family issues, and particularly when it gets into the grandparent issues that are going to be facing many of us, or perhaps already have. We'll also find out how to become a better grandparent because I checked the schedule of classes at Florida State University, Tallahassee Community College, and Florida A&M, and they don't have anything about how to be a better grandparent. Maybe you can clue us in later, Jack, on the other side of this break, rapidly bearing down on us. 850-414-1234, our number for Perspectives, and we'll be right back.
Boy, that was a quick 15 minutes.
We are back on Perspectives at 850-414-1234. And a reminder, you can always find us online at WFSU.org. Just go to that address, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, and voila, Perspectives appears magically on your screen. We archive past shows. We try to have the latest program up with it. Well, by tomorrow, we'll have it up because we're really busy back in the Miss Moynihan is just going crazy trying to get all of the new inputs and content onto our website. So we'll get it up there just as quick as we possibly can for you. Jack Levine of Four Generations Institute here with us on Perspectives, talking about families and grandparents and all that kind of thing. Again, if you're just joining us, Jack, a new grandparent, we congratulate him on that stellar achievement.
We're 9 months in, Tom. I'm getting used to it.
There you go. Well, we were going to talk here about some resources that are available to folks, particularly Jack, since as important as it is to be a parent and a grandparent, there are websites, of course. There are even some classes you can take hither and yon. But as far as a comprehensive program of how do we do this, we're sort of lacking in that regard here.
Well, there's some important history here, Tom. It's really a 30, 40-year history, which is not just my career in this work, but really Florida's looking at research. So back in the early 90s, we had a governor who I called the grandfather governor, Lawton Chiles, and he and Rhea, his wife, had a low birth weight grandchild, Lawton the Fourth. And he became aware as a grandfather of the need for better prenatal care. Well, it turns out that Lawton the Fourth did just fine with all the medical care he got. He's alive and well and very, very healthy today. And what Lawton realized is that Florida was near the bottom, fourth from the worst in infant mortality and infant morbidity, which is really two measures of the health of our babies. So he studied. He created a national commission. He was a U.S. senator at the time for looking at infant mortality. Decided to run for governor, or walk for governor, as he would say, in the early 1990s, was elected in 1990. And one of his first initiatives was Healthy Start, which is really a collaboration approach. There are 32 Healthy Start coalitions in Florida. Here in this listening area, we have a couple. We've got Capital Area. We've got Gadsden. And the bottom line is we have reduced infant mortality in Florida over the life of Healthy Start by 35%. Nobody's done more faster. Now, considering that Florida is a state with 616 babies born every day, no days off, or 220,000 a year, that's quite an achievement. Plus, we have an amazing amalgam of accessory services. So the idea that birth is natural, yes, it's a natural occurrence, but it needs some help sometimes, and sometimes there are risk moms who need some extra services. And what we have is an obligation, and Healthy Start is a wonderful example of that, of bringing the faith community, the business community, the academic community, and the health and medical community together and say, listen, what are our chances of success? How can we build on that? A very good friend of mine, Glenn Robertson, who happened to have been budget director under other governors, Bob Graham and Bob Martinez, is heading up an effort for the local Healthy Start to bring more people in, and we actually have a meeting this afternoon to discuss how many more people should be involved, and I'm going to bring in the grandparent voice. Another example, real quick. We've got the Answer Prevention Fund of Florida. It's now over 25 years old. These are investments in what works in preventing problems. That's what I call prevention, keeping bad things from happening. Their feature program is Healthy Families, which trains and helps assist usually young moms or young families in the care of their own children. It's not really complicated to say that babies don't come with instruction manuals. And this is a voluntary program. And 98% of the families served in Healthy Families do not get reported for incidents of abuse and neglect. That's a 98% success rate. That is phenomenal. They also operate Prevent Child Abuse Florida. So those are two examples. And one more I need to mention because it's also such a star program for Florida is Guardian Ad Litem. Now, these are for children, that's for children who are in the system but need a voice, a volunteer voice from the community. We are now edging on to 13,000 volunteers serving almost 30,000 children in Florida, representing them in our dependency system so that they get the correct placement, perhaps adoption, perhaps return to their natural family. But these are voices for children that we need to be proud of. So all of these are Florida homegrown and Florida success stories to supplement. Now, by the way, more than half of guardians ad litem are over age 55. So that's a natural bridge across the generations, and I think we need to be very proud of that and also to get trained and volunteer as well.
And usually once a year we will bring the folks from the Second Judicial Circuit's Guardian Ad Litem program right into this room, Jack, and we'll make a pitch to try to get more people involved there. But you brought up something interesting here when it comes to Healthy Start and some of these other resources. I just saw this morning, before I came in, because I'm checking the news feed in the morning before I even hit the door here at the station, that Florida now ranks, I believe, fifth in terms of uninsured, total uninsured population in the United States. Yes, Texas is ahead of us by a few percentage points and a few other states, primarily in the South. But we are number five in the number of folks who do not have any kind of health coverage whatsoever. And that's a bunch of kids.
Well, that's a source of embarrassment, truly, because when it comes to basic health care, I mean, even something as basic as well baby care, we have some access to programs, but those who can afford at least are less likely to have access to insurance. One of six children in Florida has never been to a dentist. The idea that cavities are painful is one thing, but the idea that looking at children who cannot concentrate in school because of bad tooth pain, I use that as an example of a population of children who need some help. And we have refused under the auspices of state government to expand our access to Medicaid. And that is wrong. There are many, many states in this nation, including Ohio under Governor Kasich and many others, who have said, listen, this is dollars that can be well invested, avoiding cost. And you don't get away with health care problems. They just worsen, and that's the problem. Oh, both emotionally and economically, it's the wrong way to go. So I think those who are advocating for wider expansion of access to health care are the right voices for our future, and we need to do more of that and follow the lead so we're not bottom, but we get to the middle or maybe towards the top.
850-414-1234, the number for Perspectives here on WFSU, the very number that our friend Dr. Ed Hollifield just called. Hey, Dr. Ed, how you doing, sir?
Oh, hi. Nice to hear from you, Tom.
It's good to hear from you, too, sir. Well, what can we do you for today, Ed?
Yeah, well, lots of people talk about infant mortality, but they seem very reluctant to talk about black infant mortality. And in 2004, I wrote a letter to the Democrat indicating that black infant mortality in Leon County was 53% higher than the state average. So I just wanted to know what his thoughts were that in regard to black infant mortality, at least in Leon County, the rate for black babies is two or three times the rate for white babies.
Well, Ed, thank you for your call. And we're talking about what I call correlative factors. We're talking about a very similar disparity in household income. We're talking about a similar disparity in criminal justice referrals, suspensions from school, and other negative factors. So, yes, we have disparities. Yes, they need to be addressed. However, we also have to realize that we have a wide selection of families who need to learn more about accessing care. What I'm saying is sometimes it's not just medical, it's informational. And I think through our faith community and other touch points of many families, we need to encourage and empower people to get access to services early enough around. So I think the bottom line here is economic disparities, and we have other indicators that prove that this racial disparity is solvable if we move on it together. And thank you for your call.
And I believe, out of that Forbes study that we recall from just a couple years ago, Leon County having perhaps one of, if not the highest incidences of income disparity, certainly in the Southeast, perhaps in the nation. There's some debate on that, but that seems to be something that continues to plague us, even in a county, Leon, which has a fairly high median household income.
Yes, and I want to underline the good work of Healthy Start. We need to get more involvement in the relationships that can be built in not only our medical circles, but in our faith circles and our employment sector. We need to embrace this issue across the racial and economic barriers so that we can all be proud of a generation of very healthy children. And thank you, Ed.
Okay. What about, I guess, helpful hints for grandparents, if you could, Jack, because that's something that does not come with an instruction manual either, or the aforementioned college level courses. That it seems sometimes that we as American grandparents feel that our prime directive is to sabotage our kids and their relationship with their children because grandparents come in and we spoil them to death.
Well, I think, Tom, that grandparenthood, now that I'm 9 months in, magnifies everything. It can magnify the positive, and tragically, it can magnify the negative. If grandparents do not have a trusting relationship with their own children, or they are judgmental about their own children's choices, either of spouse, sometimes it's a second marriage and people are very critical of divorce, there are some questions of who trusts whom. And I'm not a therapist, I'm not a psychologist, but, you know, once in a while I have my network inform me that Florida needs a better balance between grandparent rights and parent rights so that proactively we do have rules now about premarital counseling. I think we should have some rules about pre-grandparenting counseling. And I don't want that to be the headline out of this because I don't believe in mandates, but I do believe in access to some quality preparation. So let me give you two examples. One example is because we have such mobility and technology, there are lots of grandparents who hardly see their grandchildren. So if you don't see your grandchildren, you're going to kind of put that 1 week a year or maybe three visits a year, depending on affordability and transportation, into supercharging the gifts, supercharging the excitement, supercharging the trip to Disney or Universal or SeaWorld or wherever. And maybe that's not what the children need. Maybe what the children really need is some quiet quality time, talking about family history, talking about that family album. Give the child a sense of place and where history is coming from. And that's especially important for immigrant families because a lot of children don't know where their grandparents were born. And that's kind of a tragedy, especially for someone who was raised knowing that stuff. So that's one thing, is we can't compress 52 weeks into one or two visits a year and expect a good outcome. And technology allows, you know, FaceTime and getting on devices to do that. But, you know, babies know it's not real life. They look at it and it's kind of a screen. It's really not a person. The other thing that I think we need to mention, and that was a positive, that's saying let's get some quality time in there, is to create a neighborhood approach that even if the child does not have his or her own grandparent, there are reach across from other people who are of the grandparent age to kind of show that foods don't need to come out of a bag in a box and in a microwave. That's not the only kind of cooking. Actually, take some vegetables, create a community garden, and some meats if you choose meats and some spices. Cook food. Not only that, but put it in bowls and sit at the table and eat and talk about it. You know, when I talk to teen groups and I say, you know, I come from a day where people actually sat and ate together and put away their devices, and they look at me like, whoa, you are old. So I think we could have substitute for our own grandparents, not instead of course, but when the grandparents are not around, and have neighborhood approaches. I call it the village approach. And I'm not the first person to mention that. But if, for example, in Greater Tallahassee, we have some more elder concentrated living arrangements like my friends at Westminster Oaks. I think they have a great capacity, and some are already doing this, of being generational bridges. So we have opportunities here. Intergenerational is the catchword or the catchphrase, but I think we need to do more of this. And you know what? It not only benefits the kids, it benefits the grandparents. It's a tremendous mutually beneficial relationship. So let's talk about that and do more of that. But my coaching is about be honest and be available and be conversant and don't think you have to entertain and have a 15-item list. Or teach the child to give gifts to the children who don't have what they have. One gift for their own grandchild and one gift for a charity or an organization that promotes adoption, or perhaps one that promotes healthy lifestyles, lack of drug or smoking or that kind of opportunity. Or pets. We love animals too. So let's teach philanthropy through our family relationships. How do you like that one?
That is a great one, because there are certainly lots and lots of opportunities to do that sort of thing, Jack. You've got animal rescue programs out the yin-yang in this community, but you also have mentorship programs, whether it's through the school district, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, a whole host of those kinds of things where you can take your generational wisdom and, well, back in my day, and kind of bring that to a child who might not have access to that through their own family.
You know, we just honored, she's been honored before, but she deserves all of her accolades. A dear friend, she happens to be a neighbor of ours. Her name is Dot Binger, Dorothy Binger. We call her Dot. Everybody I know calls her Dot. Over 90 years old. A devoted 29-year guardian ad litem. Now, she may be listening, and Dot is declining some. I mean, 90 is 90. But her decline has not been emotionally, and it's not been in devotion to these children. And what she creates is a bond between, I think it's usually girls' cases that she takes, and creates a conversation, even in her own voice, which is weakening, to say, listen, I'm not getting paid for this, but even if I was, I would be as devoted to you, because there are professionals who are there to help you as well as volunteers. She's a teacher and a mentor to these young people, saying, whatever has happened to you, we can work together to make a better future. I mean, here is an optimistic 90-plus-year-old who is being honored, but she really deflects that kind of attention. She just wants it concentrated on the children. And she's just one example of literally tens of thousands who are doing this work, because it's about legacy, Tom, about what will we be remembered. So I'm shouting out to my friend Dot Binger and all the other guardians ad litem out there who give their time and their talent for children.
Here's to you, Dot. 850-414-1234, the number for Perspectives on WFSU. Jack Levine, the founder and head guy at the Four Generations Institute, here with us talking families, talking grandparents, and talking with you if you'd like to chat with him. Or you can send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. Yes, the generation that said never trust anyone over 30. And then, Jack, we surpass that magical number on the life chart. And we're sure hoping people trust us, right?
When I was a young teacher in the Bronx, so I was 22, 23 years old. And these ancient teachers, they were probably 40. were trying to dissuade us from doing creative things with our kids. And we just thought, I mean, the fact that they were even walking and talking at the same time was amazing to us.
Yeah, what we called it, the Mr. Chip syndrome, I think it was. And for those of you who don't know, that was a book we all used to have to read back in high school. But we have a tendency sometimes, I guess, Jack, to tilt at windmills and shake our fist at the stars and all that. But in this country, we can have an influence on how public policy, whether it's children's issues or the elderly or whatever else, how those discussions move forward, even in today's hyper-partisan age. So what wisdom can you impart to us on that score?
Well, you can judge if it's wisdom or not, but I can tell you my perspective. The name of your show. First of all, for 40 years, I've been advocating family policies strictly nonpartisan, bipartisan, and if you push me, antipartisan. I am an antipartisan, which means that I don't think you need partisanship to get things done. And some of our best accomplishments in Florida had nothing to do with Republicans and Democrats. It had to do with unifying around causes. I mentioned infant mortality, protecting abused, neglected children, and things like that. The other thing about politics that I think has really gotten away from us are the basics of actually hearing from those who seek to represent us in our representative democracy in substance, rather than catchphrases, rather than labels, rather than grenades across the partisan lines, which gets nothing but damage rather than positive momentum. So I know it sounds naive, but I'm looking for substance. I'm looking for folks who have either researched themselves or are willing to sit with people who understand where to put our dollars. For example, quality preschool. We have a constitutional provision in the Florida Constitution for quality pre-K, but we're judged bottom three or four in the nation for how we define that quality. So we need to really kind of put our money where our Constitution is and our laws are when it comes to that investment. And I hope for the day when we can reduce our dropout rate and increase our higher education achievement rate by putting more and better resources in our young children. And that's a political issue because you got to put your dollars somewhere, and I think prevention is the way to go. Now, voting. You know, the idea that people have fought and died, both in foreign wars, but also in the civil rights era, which still exists, by the way, it's not over, for the right to vote is really not known by our younger generation. Our younger generation does not know that voting did not come cheap. It did not come easy. It did not come without effort, without courage. When Charlotte and I visited Montgomery, Alabama, two summers ago with our in-laws, and we walked the Edmund Pettus Bridge, the same bridge that was walked by, of course, Dr. King and John Lewis and others, really for the rights to vote, to access fair elections, not only in the state of Alabama, but frankly, for the entire southern region, we had people who died. We had people who were separated from their families, imprisoned. And that sweat and toil, I think, needs to create a new generation of young voters. If you're 30 years old in the United States of America, the likelihood that you are a registered regular voter is less than 30%. Now, if they want any kind of future in their family life, in their economic life, they need to know that there is a difference among the different candidates and get to know the importance of voting. So I think those who are voicing the interests of increasing access to the polls, which we have done now in Florida, we have unified registration by going on Department of State Division of Elections websites. We have early voting. We have mail-in voting. We have there are those who are actually advocating in the future making Election Day a national holiday so you don't have to take off from work on Election Day. But I think right now, even though there are some exclusionary laws being passed and sometimes overturned, we have every right and responsibility to be active voters. Now, of course, there's always the naysayer who will say, what is what my one vote matter? Well, there have been some elections that have been coin flips. I mean, literally coin flips. So that means that one does matter. And even the example we set for our children by being registered and active voters is a positive step in the right direction. So I just want to say that that's one of the lessons that we who are of an age, I'm 67 now, but we who are of an age really do remember those horrible, horrible days of the barking dogs, the fire hoses, the bombings of churches, the lynchings, the horrible events that happened in the American South and frankly elsewhere that were basically about keeping people from the polls. We have changed that remarkably. We need to exercise that change and make sure that we have a new generation of voters who are ready to take the mantle of leadership.
And at the same token, to keep an eye on what new initiatives might be brewing to try to continue that certainly less than honorable tradition of selecting your electorate if you are in political office. We've seen it with the way that districts have been formed here in Florida and elsewhere to give the folks in power, whether Republican or Democrat, an edge in the next electoral cycle.
And that's why I'm a very big adherent to most of the platform issues of the League of Women Voters. I know they sound exclusionary because they only speak to one gender in their name, but they are a multi-gender organization. I say that because I asked them, I pleaded with them to change it to the League of responsible voters or something that was more non-generic, but I mean non-specific gender. But bottom line is they have a tremendous diversity of initiatives that speak just to what you spoke about, which is about fairness, about access to the polls. And, you know, right now we're facing more than a dozen constitutional amendments on the ballot, which is going to slow down the voting process. I mean, I'm telling my network members, who are numerous across the state of Florida, do your homework, vote early, and make sure that you know that if you wait till Election Day, you are prepared to have a big conflict with your own timing, because there will be lines and lines and lines. And the longer the day on November 6th, the later you vote, the more challenging it will be. So please take this seriously. This is a year that there won't be any absence of choices, and the choices will be there. And not doing it is kind of an offense to those who fought and died for that right.
As we sometimes preach to our children, remember, you get what you vote for or not. And it's up to you.
And again, my voice is strictly nonpartisan. You won't find me a dime or a minute supporting any one candidate or political party. That's not my role. None of today's babies are born Republican or Democrat. So we've got to really come around the fact that we're talking about bipartisanship. No matter where you sit in the political spectrum, participation is our goal.
Well, back to something that you referenced earlier, Jack, and that is that, number one, demographics is not our friend. We are going to continue to age, both personally and as a nation, and especially here in Florida, and even in Tallahassee, which is toss up between us and Gainesville, the youngest communities in Florida. I attended a meeting yesterday. This is the new group that's been around for actually about 4 years, but it lagged and now it's come back with a vengeance. Kind of grassroots, a little bit of government, local government support, but not a whole bunch. It's called Choose Tallahassee.
Yes.
And their whole thing is, as you know, to bring more retirees to our community for greater population diversity, if nothing else. We're going to see some more folks in our age range before too terribly long.
Yes, and retirement is, for some people, a way of slowing down. I know some people who have retired and transitioned in some very exciting enterprises, both with causes as well as with artistic endeavors. And it's really a kind of a new life for them. And again, that grandparenting piece is relevant. There's a national organization called Generations United that I'm very active with. It's an easy website, gu.org. And we gather together every second year in conference, but we are 24/7 when it comes to access to the website. And we are looking at model programs for conjoined housing initiatives, this neighborhood village approach. We are looking at ways that we could enliven the mentorship and volunteerism. By the way, I don't use the term volunteer. I call it time philanthropy. How's that for a good phrase?
I like it.
The investment of our value time. And again, I come back to saying guardian ad litem is a perfect example. We're talking about millions and millions of hours over the life of guardian ad litem given to the children so that judges can make better life and death decisions. What better cause is there to give of your time? And if it's not for everybody, you can support the efforts of these agencies that promote adoption, promote child abuse prevention. So, I mean, sitting and just observing, no offense to the media, but sitting and just observing somebody else do things is not where a lot of people are. They want to do things themselves. And I think that this idea of having Tallahassee to be, or greater Tallahassee to be, a hub of this activism is very, very exciting. And I support that effort.
And a very American way to handle situations.
That's,
you go back to the founding of the Republic and you didn't have big government programs and these kinds of interventions. It was, talk about a bootstrap operation. Hey, we all jump in together because Zeke lost his barn. We're having a barn raising on Saturday, and boom, you got it done.
And this Frenchman, Alexis de Tocqueville, observed that, and reading his writings is probably a good idea, because we didn't invent this newly invented. It's happened for for more than a century plus. And again, this immigration mix is very exciting to me. Very exciting.
We have less than 5 minutes remaining. Jack, any other things that you'd like to impart that have been kind of fuminating in that incredibly fertile brain of yours here?
Well, I think we have not only the opportunity, but really the obligation to do some pre-passing memorials for folks. And the word memorial is usually about memory. I attended a memorial service for my nephew, who at 50 years old succumbed to a drug addiction. He OD'd recently. I wasn't going to bring this up, but here I am. And the testimonials at his memorial were really not sad. They were about the man he was when he wasn't under the influence, the giving man, the inspiration, the charismatic Thomas. And these were strangers to me. These were people who had gone through episodes of recovery with Thomas. And I sat there saying, Thomas is unable to hear these accolades. If he had heard these accolades, maybe he would have had an extra motivation to not do what he was doing. So I think we need to take every opportunity to say please and thank you and to honor those who are doing good work, but also help those who are on the edge. Because when we think about it, it's all about legacy. We're the only species that could know our past and plan our future. And maybe some living eulogies would be a good institution so that we don't have to wait until the person can't hear our accolades, but really lift them up in life and their family and their community.
So don't wait until someone is gone to say nice things to them.
No, don't wait. Don't wait. It may be too late. And you never know when. I mean, you know, we're facing this monster storm to our neighbors to the north right now. Those lives will be changing. Now, there's no way to stop the hurricane that that is forming and will be here almost by the minute. But there is a way of recognizing that there are sacred relationships that need to be reinforced.
It was not to wax biblical here, but I believe an admonition somewhere in Scripture that the question came, you know, who is my brother? Who is that person
yes.
connected to me? And we know what the answer was.
Yes, yes. And you know, even in our religious practices, not to minimize them because they're so vital to so many people, there are lessons that need to be reinforced. And the one that, you know, that I try to ascribe to is the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And practicing that, especially now that we are so separate in so many ways, is a good way for the future, paving a positive path. I think it's very important, Tom, and I know that those who are doing the good work appreciate that, and I think we need to appreciate them.
And it is common to every segment of humankind since the very beginning, regardless of faith tradition or nationality or anything else that would divide us, that one simple imperative is common to everyone.
It's an inspiration, Tom. And the word inspiration comes from the breath. You take a breath, you inspire. And the word encouragement comes from core, the heart. So I think we need to kind of personalize these relationships and recognize that it's time to say please and thank you both, and we can make progress.
We have made some progress today, Dr. Levine. We thank you for your inspiration and your
insights. That was
the
easiest doctorate ever given.
There you go. Let's see, and I will write you your diploma by hand. How does that sound? Our thanks to all of our listeners here on WFSU's Perspectives and the participants who send us their comments and add to the conversation week after week after week. And a little program note here, not not too many weeks from now, we'll be diving into yet another series of political perspectives here on WFSU. Not to avoid partisanship. In some cases, though, these races will not be partisan because they're city and county commission and also Leon County School District. The folks who won back during the primary, we're going to bring them back on deck and give you another opportunity to ask them any kind of questions that you have, voice your concerns, and you could be part of the generation of public policy just by interacting with those folks when we bring them on. That'll be happening during the first couple weeks in October here on WFSU. So we invite you to tune in not only on the radio, but also on Facebook Live and for FSU. And you can see our brand new talk studio, which was just recently revamped. So something more interesting for you visually to look at. Jack Levine, thank you so much
for being part of the show today, Tom. Always a pleasure.
It is a pleasure indeed for us as well, sir. Perspectives produced by WFSU with technical assistance today, courtesy of Evan Rossi and Lydell Rawls on the phones and email device. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, it's our yearly trek way down upon the Apalachicola River, not so very far away. Polish up your paddles. We'll talk about it next Thursday right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.